So tonight's shiur is L'Ilui Nishmat Aisha Menya Bas Herzl. We're in Sumer Shlashim now, so in her memory. And this year is kind of part one of a two-part shiur. I want to talk today about the view of the Rishonim, and then we're going to see that with the revelation of Kabbalah and the Arizal, everything changed. So all of this is a pre-Arizal approach. And the topic is the nature of God. What, when we talk about God, what does that mean? Or more specifically, what can we not say about God? Or specifically, we'll see one aspect of whether we can or not. And how can we know about God? What tools can we use to know about God? I suppose that's really the main topic. How are we supposed to go about knowing about God? So I'll start with this quote from Moreh Nevuchim. I copied the translation from Friedlander. At the end, this is almost the very end of Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam has an analogy of a palace. And he talks about the people. Some people are way outside the city's walls, and some people are inside the city, but not even in the garden. Some people are in the garden. Some people are inside the palace, but not in the... And some people are right inside the room with the king. So that depends basically on whatever, on how hard you've worked to do what you're supposed to do, or how intelligent you are, or how much you've used your thought. So he's talking about people, different groups of people. So he says, we have already spoken of the various degrees of prophets. Fine, okay. We will therefore return to the subject of this chapter and exhort those who have attained a knowledge of God to concentrate all their thoughts on God. People who understand God should think about God. This is the worship peculiar to those who have acquired a knowledge of the highest truth. And the more they reflect on him and think of him, the more are they engaged in his worship. In other words, people who know how to think about God or who know how to understand God should think about God. However, who think of God and frequently mention his name without any correct notion of him, but merely following some imagination or some theory received from another person, so people walk around saying Baruch Hashem and God this and God that, but they don't actually know what God is or what that means. Maybe someone told them once that there's God, and they talk about it all the time, but they don't know what it is. According to Rambam, right, they are, in my opinion, like those who remain outside the palace and distant from it. Well, I mean, they're doing their best, but they're wasting their time, basically. They do not mention the name of God in truth, or I guess truth, because they don't know what God is, so they can't talk about God. They're talking about something like that, right? Nor do they reflect on it. That which they imagine and mention does not correspond to any being in existence. It is a thing invented by their imagination, as has been shown by our discussion on the divine attributes. The true worship of God is only possible when correct notions of him have previously been conceived. So you can't worship God, you can't talk about God, you can't think about God unless you first know who or what God is. That's what the Rambam says, and if you don't know what God is but talk about him anyway, okay, you know, you're way on the outside somewhere, and, you know, nebuch. So it's therefore it must be important to try and understand how we should understand God, because if we want to get inside the palace, according to Rambam, we have to think about God, having first thought about God. Kuzri is actually earlier than Rambam, although later than Sadia Gaon, so I guess sources 2 and source 3 are out of order. But there's one specific issue about God that is so obvious to us that it goes without saying, and it's fundamental to Judaism, but which in fact was a machloket in the time of the Rishonim. And that is, can we say that God has a body? Can we say that God has any physical attributes? Can we think about God in any terms which are physical? It's obvious that we can't, right? We know that to say that God has a body, that God does, moves, stands, anything physical about God is a meaningless statement. We know that, and that's accepted by everybody. However, we're going to see that there were Rishonim who didn't say like that. And the interesting thing is why, what is the essence of the argument? So here's some people who say that God does not have a body. The Kuzri, written by Yehuda Halevi in Spain in the 11th century, I think, possibly 12th, says, right, the Kuzri is a dialogue between the king of the Khazars and the rabbi. So Amar HaKuzri, the king of the Khazars, says, Hine kol ha-shamea sipureichem shel al shalakati bereh mamoneichem v'ketav lachem luchot u'kedome anybody who hears the stories of the Jewish people about how God spoke to the Jewish people, how about how God wrote on the tablets, right, things like that. Ein hashimo imirachem kemagshimei halakha. So you can't blame them for thinking that you've made God physical, because writing is something that a person does, that a physical thing does. Speaking is something physical. So if you talk about God speaking or God writing, then you've made God physical. Ulam gam etchem ein hashim, but we can't blame you Jews. Sharei efshar lachem litchot edotam shel ha'ma'amadim hagdolim haniskavim she'en la'atil be'em sabek. You can't be blamed because you were there, you saw it. We can't ask any questions about this event that happened. So clearly, even though it doesn't make sense that God has the body, but you experienced it. So, right. She'en la'atil be'em sabek l'chen tatzdiku be'hashlichichem achagachem et ha'hekesh ha'egyoni ve'et ha'iyon ha'sichli. So therefore, says the Kuzri, it must be that you people abandon rational intellect and just go by your tradition of what you have. Right? It, logically, you can't say that God speaks, but you experience God speaking. Therefore, we have to say that it doesn't make sense, so you guys are not rational. Okay, I mean, that's the question. The Chaver says, Chas v'shalom, Chalila lanu, me'el shenamin benimna. Chas v'shalom, you should believe in something that is impossible or illogical. Can't be. Or something which the intellect rejects. Right? Judaism says the Kuzri is a rational religion. We don't believe in things that are impossible or that don't make sense logically. So Ra'el kenimna, something which appears impossible. Achen acharei harishana, ba'aseh ha'dibros, banis davenu al ha'emuna be'eloka. Right? After we've received the first of the Ten Commandments, which says belief in God, ba'o b'shniya ha'isru lavod elohim achirim, the second commandment of the Ten is to not believe in any other gods. And va'asur hashituf, and not to believe in anything helping God. Aval gama atara milidmot devar eloha miloka, ba'asotenu lano pesel tmuna. But also in that commandment is a prohibition of making any form or image to represent God. Zot amerat achaka min hakshama b'chlal. That means we reject any kind of physicality to God. Ve'ech lo niromem et eloka mi'al l'hakshama. And we elevate God above anything which is physical. So even though we experienced God speaking or writing, whatever it was, we absolutely reject any form of physicality to God. Why do we reject that? Because it's illogical. It can't be that God could be bound by any physical constraints which a body would imply. And the second point is as important as the first point. Kuzri says we can't possibly believe in any kind of physicality for God. And the reason for that is because it would be illogical. But I mean, the basic assumption, every time it says in the Torah, Vayidaber Adonai Moshe le'emor, that would imply physicality. So we have to reinterpret the verses somehow in order to make God not physical, because a physical God is illogical. Rashi again says a similar idea of Sadiq was earlier than the Kuzari. He says the same idea. Again, it's not my translation. He says, when I came to deal with the subject of the Creator, I found that people reject this whole inquiry. Right? When he tries to talk, give a shiur on God, no one's interested. Others, again, go so far as to picture him as a body. Others, while not explicitly describing him as a body, assigned him quantities or quality or space or time or similar things, and by looking for these qualities, they do in fact assign to him a body, since these attributes belong only to a body. The purpose of my introductory remarks is to remove their false ideas, take a load from their minds, to point out that the extreme subtleness which we have assigned to the nature of the Creator is, so to speak, its own warrant. And the fact that in our reasoning we find the notion of God to be more abstract than other knowledge shows that reasoning to be correct. Even though people believe in a God who does physical things, which implies a physical God, but our reason, logic, shows not like that. It shows that God is not physical, and therefore we reject any kind of physicality for God. Right, now, why does logic show that God cannot be physical? Why does logic show that God can't be physical?
Then
he'd be limited. Be finite, exactly. More than that, if God is one, then one which includes all oneness, then if he had a limit, then there'd be something else apart from God. Or there'd be room for a thing. Anyways, other way around. The reason Rambam says there can only be one God is because God is not physical. Because if there were two gods, there has to be some kind of limit between them, so where one stops and the other one starts. So we reject physicality as a way of showing there's one God. And the Rambam codifies that in the 13 principles. This concept, again, this concept goes back to the Rav Sadia and the Kuzri, and even goes back earlier to Philo. Rambam is the first person to make any kind of rules of what you have to believe and not believe. And he puts this as the third of his principles, 13 principles. He saw the Shlishi in source number 4. Shlilat hagshamot mimenu, right? The negation of any kind of physicality to God. The who? What does this mean? Shazer ha'echad. This one, right? First principle is to believe there is the one and created everything. Third principle is he's not physical. This one, right? Eino guf, he is not a body. Velo kos beguf, and he's not a fourth of a body. Velo yir ehu me'arot hagufim, and anything physical can't happen to him, or he can't do the kagon hatnua, va'menucha, like movement or rest. Lo be'etzim velo be'mikre. Not as his essence and not as something that he does incidentally. Right? The kol ma sheba b'sfarim, anything we find in the books, meaning in the Tanakh, mita'arav, we're describing God, b'tarei ha'gufot, using physical descriptions. Kigon, for example, it says ha'alicha, God walks, ha'mida, God stands, ha'yeshiva, God sits, ha'dibur, God speaks, kiyoti b'zeh, all of these physical things, hem kulam derech hashala, these are all metaphors. Or euphemisms or analogies or something. Euphemism is good. Kamash Amru, Dibra Torah Kalashon Bnei Adam. Like our sages said, the Torah speaks in a human language. We haven't got words for what God does. So we use human words. But that in no way means that God does any of those things. Right? It's a false to say that God speaks is a way of saying God does something which the only word we can use is speech, but certainly God does not speak. Because that would imply physicality. Right. Speech is something that comes from a physical body. Ukvar dibru b'nei adam b'inyan ze'arbe. Many people have spoken about this. V'zeh ha'yisod ha'shlishi, hu ha'shem moreh alav, mash ne'mar, and the proof text of the third principle is the verse that says, ki lo ri'item kol t'muna. At Mount Sinai you saw no image. Kolomar, in other words, lo ha'sagtem ato b'al t'muna. You didn't perceive him as any kind of image. And the reason he didn't perceive him as an image is because he's not physical and has no physical attributes at all. But again, Rambam is saying the same thing as Rav Sadia and the Kuzari, that God is not physical. Now that's the Pirush Mishnayos. In the Mishnah Torah, he says the same thing. In Yisrael Torah, again, Rambam, source number 5, Hamatsui, has there this prime existence. Hu Eloka Alam, he is the God of the universe. Adon Kol Aretz, the master of the earth. Vehu Manhiga Galgal, the Koach She'en Lo Ketz Tachlit, he moves the spheres with unending, with infinite energy. Bekoach She'en Lo Hefsek, right, with unending power. Shagalgal Tzavev Tumi, because the sphere is constantly turning. Meaning that the heavens are turning around the whole time. When we watch the sun comes up and it goes down, the moon comes up and the stars move. Everything moves. And there's actually several different Galgalim. They all move. And what's pushing them along must be God, who's infinite. It will be impossible for things to rotate without something pushing them. And God, who moves them, below yad, below guf. He does it, even though that movement is a physical thing. God does it without a hand or without any kind of physical thing to move the spheres around. And he says, "Ilu hayu." This is the logical proof why God can have no physical, why there can't be two gods. "Ilu hayu ha'elohut harbeh." If there were multiple gods, hayu gufin ugviot, then they would be physical, by definition. Mepnei she'ein hanimnin hashavin b'metziatan nifadin zemizeh. Because if they were both identical without physical limitations, then they wouldn't be two; they'd only be one. Ela b'morin she'iru hagufot ha'gviot. The only way of separating two things is some kind of physical. I get physical is maybe the wrong word because you have a spiritual separation, but there must be some kind of limit to gods if there is more than one, which is what Rambam would call koach guf. Ilu haya hayotzei guf ugvia, if God had a body, hayalok hetzetachlit, he would be finite and limited. Sheyefshar liyot guf she'en lo ketz, because it's impossible to have a body which is infinite. V'kol sheyesh lo ketz tachrit yesh kocho ketz v'sof. Anything which has is limited in its body has a limit to its power and its energy. And since so first of all, we don't want a God who's limited, and we can't be a God who's limited because the spheres are constantly rotating infinitely, so therefore God must be infinite, therefore God must have no body. Right? So anything physical can't be anything to do with God. So therefore Rambam would say, any time you find a verse or a concept that seems to be attributing physicality to God, you reinterpret it as a metaphor or as a euphemism, as an analogy to something else. Right? You have to change all the simple meanings of the Torah, Tanakh, and all the statements of Chazal, you have to change all of those into euphemisms, which is what we do all the time. Every time we read any of those things, no one believes when God took us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, that like in Monty Python, a hand reached down and grabbed. And nobody believes that. Right? We understand a hand is a way of describing an energy and some kind of force or power, whatever it is. It's not physical. Right? We all understand that and all know that, and the Rambam codifies that. That's a belief. More than that, Hilchos Teshuva, he says, right, he has a list of people who get no share in the world to come. Right? One of the categories of people who don't get a share in the world to come is a category of min. Well, you call it a heretic, but there's so many different words for heretic that it's the meaning of the word min. So Rama says, Chamisha, Hein, and Sor Seven. Chamisha, Hein, and Nikrein, Minim. There are five categories of minim, of people who are min. One of them is Ha'omer, Shiesham, Ribon, Echad, someone who believes there is one God. Ela, Shehu, Guf, or Bal Tmuna, but that he is a body or has an image. Somebody who believes in God but believes he's an old man with a big white beard sitting on a throne up in heaven has no share in the world to come, says Rambam. I mean, that's slightly disturbing because in all the cartoons that's what it looks like, but in the paintings, in Michelangelo, that's what it looks like. Anyway, anyone who believes that God has any physicality, says Rambam, has no portion in the world to come. Finished. Okay, we're not bothered by that because we don't believe God is physical. Says the Ravid, on the spot. Right. Ravid always comes to argue with Rambam. And he says in source number 8, I just put my English translation, why does he call this person a heretic? Many greater and better people than he followed this line of thought, based on what they saw in the biblical verses, and even more so on what they saw in the words of Agada, which confused the intellect. Maybe I should read that in Hebrew.
I believe you.
Thank you. That's it. You're believers just like that. Have I taught you nothing? Don't believe anything unless you check it yourself. The Ravid says, Lama kara laze min, why does Rambam call such a person a heretic? The kama gedolim v'tovim mimenu, there are many who are greater and better than the Rambam, halchu b'ze ha-machshava, who followed this pattern of thought. Lefi ma shira'u b'mikra'ot, based on what they saw in the text, more than that, mima shira'u b'divrei ha-agadot, what they saw in the words of Agadata, ha-mishabshot et ha-deot, which confused the intellect. So, does Ravid believe that God has a body? That's a no. Good. Right. I think Ravid does not believe God has a body. But Ravid is saying that many people did believe God has a body, and it's a mistake. It doesn't mean that they lose their portion of the world. It shouldn't call them a heretic. It's a mistake. What are they doing? Why do they make that mistake? Because they read what it says in the Chumash, and they believe what it says in the Chumash. Right? They read the Agadata. They read that it says in the Gemara that God showed Moshe the knot of his tefillin, of God's tefillin. They believe that God wears tefillin. Right? There's a whole half-page discussion on what's written inside God's tefillin. Right? So they believe God has tefillin. And it says God is Ish Milchama. They believe God is a man of war, and it says that God's outstretched arm, and God's sitting, and God's standing, and God's all of those things, right? God's walking in Gan Eden. They believe what it says in the Torah and Tanakh, and in the Agadot, in the Midrashim. So the Ravid says somebody who believes what it says in the words, how can that be a heretic? Right? Rambam would say, you're a heretic. Why are you a heretic? Because you didn't figure out what God is first. Yeah.
What is the oral tradition like actually bring down that when it comes to like the attributes or like the nature of God?
Where does it say, what does it say in the Gemara about whether God has a body?
What, yeah, like...
Nowhere
what?
does it say. Nowhere, as far as I know, does it say in any statement of Chazal, or really any pasuk in Tanakh, that God has no body. Rambam found a verse, you didn't see an image, right, at Har Sinai. But all that means is that at Har Sinai you didn't see an image. Doesn't mean necessarily that God has no
image. Like, I understand getting to it logically, but I'm just curious as to what is actually, like...
I don't believe anywhere in any statement before, like, Philo. I don't believe in any statement of Chazal, or from the Mishnah, Gemara or Mishnah, or from the Tanakh, or anywhere it says explicitly, God has no body.
What about, like, the characteristics of God?
Because God is merciful, God is kind, God is
it says all
good,
that.
Yeah.
So
all those things imply physicality, in a sense.
No, I'm just curious if it says that and then doesn't say, like,
yeah, it does.
To be clear.
Right, it does say
don't
many
ever
times.
Think that God has a body.
Many times. Right. Hashem Rachum V'chanun Erech Apayim Rav Chesed V'Emet Notzeh Chesed L'Alafim. All of those things sound like physical attributes, sound like some kind of physicality. And the Gemara talks about all sorts of descriptions of God. But the Gemara is very... I mean, in Tanakh there are many references to God doing things that seem physical. Right? God smelled the savory odor by the flood from Noah. God came down to see the Tower of Babel. God,
I understand, like, why it's necessary. I mean, why, like, we wouldn't be able to put it any other way. We wouldn't be able to talk.
Exactly. We need to use words because we've only got words.
That's the only way we know how to.
Right.
There's no, like, such thing as spiritual.
Correct. Language. Correct. But what there isn't is any kind of writer saying, by the way, anything you read here is a euphemism.
Right.
That's missing.
Right.
I don't believe that exists.
That's what I was curious
about.
Yeah,
don't believe it exists anyway.
Because if it doesn't say it,
right,
then how can Rambam call them heretics? Because they're not really, like, going against anything.
Right. They believe what it says in the word.
Right.
That's exactly the right point.
Okay.
Exactly so. How can Rambam say some of the heretics? So,
But how does he define a greater and better person? Like, isn't somebody who's been learning and sitting and learning with his Rav, like, wouldn't they have gotten that Hashem is infinite and not physical? If somebody is a person who's
the Rambam, the first Rambam we looked at, talks about people who kind of receive traditions about God without really thinking about God. And a person like that is outside the palace going to Rambam.
But then how would they be greater and better? What's he saying about, like...
Right, so who's he talking about?
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah.
It sounds like they're an idiot.
People of simple faith.
But simple, you know...
Apulchubas.
I believe. But who on earth is Rambam talking... Who is the Riva talking about that's greater or better than Rambam who could believe such a thing?
Right.
Specifically, I want some names. Names and addresses. I want to send them a letter telling them they're wrong. We find that Ozarua says a similar idea to the Ravid. Talk number 9. Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon wrote in chapter 3 of Hilchot Tshuva that 5 categories of people are called heretics. Says Ozarua, who's a Rishon, his words, Rambam's words, are outside the opinion of the Talmud. In other words, Rambam made that up. It's not anywhere in the Talmud that this such a person is called a heretic. Even though logic dictates and the simple reading of Tanakh that God has no physical body or form, as the verse states, to whom can you compare God, and what image can you describe for him, which is not the verse that Rambam used. But, again, the two logic dictates. And he claims the simple reading of Tanakh. I'm not sure that the simple reading of Tanakh does say that. But this verse, okay, fine. And this is known by all wise people. Fine. But someone who errs and doesn't descend to the depths of the matter and understands the verses literally, and holds that God has an image, is not called a heretic. If that were true, if such a person was a heretic, if that was a bad mistake to make, then why did the Torah not publicize this fact that God has no body? Why did the sage of the Talmud not make it known explicitly? Should have been a big stamp on the front saying, don't take it literally. Right? Since there's not, says the Ozarua, this person can't be a heretic and is rejecting Rambam. Again, what's the basis of a person who believes literally? They haven't thought enough. According to the Rambam, according to the Ravid, and according to the Ozarua. I'm sorry, the Ozarua continues over onto page 3. Right, the sages of the Mishnah and the Talmud do not... This is why I think that no one says that. Not that I know the whole Mishnah Talmud, but all the Rambam did. The sages of the Mishnah Talmud did not involve themselves with this, but accept it as a tradition and with faith. They didn't teach to investigate the matter, right? They never said, go and find out about God. There are many of the holy sages of the Talmud, from whom comes the Torah, who didn't set their hearts to contemplate the nature of God, but simply accepted the verses according to their simple meaning, and based on this naivety, they thought that God has a body and an image. Heaven forbid that we should call such people heretics. So he doesn't list names, but the Ozura implies that there were people in the Gemara who clearly greater and better than Rambam, because they're in the Gemara, they're Amoraim, or they're in the Mishnah and the Tanaim, and they believe that God has a body. He doesn't say what he's referring to over there. So that's one group of people the writer's talking about, right? People in Chazal believe God has a body. And I'm not sure there's clear evidence for that. Because you can always reinterpret all the words of Chazal, as Rambam would do, interpret them figuratively. So that even though they seem to be saying God has a body, Rambam would say they didn't. Chas v'shalom, no one from Chazal, none of the rabbis thought that God had a body. They were speaking metaphorically. As you know, Rambam's books were banned. Put in Chemla, I think three different times they tried to ban his books until eventually they were banned and they burned his books. What was the... Actually, it's not fair. Each of the three times there was a slightly different issue as to why they were banning Rambam's books. But the most famous ban on the books of the Rambam was the ban that ultimately they started with Rav Shlomo Montpellier, Shlomo Menahar, and ultimately came from the Balei Tosfot, the rabbis in Safat. And they banned, they put Rambam's books in Cherem, and they forbade people from owning such books. And the truth is, I kind of put the wrong quote over here. There's a wonderful letter of the Ramban. The Ramban stepped in as kind of a peacemaker. This is after the Rambam has died. This third ban on the Rambam. After Rambam died, Rambam steps in to try and stop the Balei Tosfot from putting Rambam into Cherem. And he writes this wonderful letter. It's very poetic and quotes lots of that. It's a beautiful letter. I think Chevelle translated it into English, but I didn't see that. I only had the Hebrew version. And really, you have to go through the whole thing. He talks about how amazing, firstly, how amazing you rabbis are in France, and how amazing Rambam is, and he said, what are you guys fighting about, and you misunderstood each other, and a real piece of thing. But what were they fighting about? So look at this source number 10, our French rabbis, right? L'chvod, right? We are their students, we drink from their waters, so very poetic and powerful. In all the land of France, its rabbis and ministers agree to excommunicate somebody who reads the Guide for the Perplexed and Sefer Mada. Right? The rest of the Rambam, I think, was okay, but Sefer Mada, which we, especially Yisodei HaTorah, I guess parts of Hilchos Teshuva, or Moreh Nevuchim, anyone who reads such a book is kicked out, finished. Why? So the Ramban's defending him. He, Rambam, was like someone forced with no choice to build the book as a refuge from the Greek philosophers, to get away from Aristotle and Galen. In other words, where Rambam was living, people had these questions. He had to write answers. He had to first go and study Aristotle, so he'd know how to explain the Torah to people who knew Aristotle. He had to go and learn things that really he shouldn't have been learning so much, but he was forced to do that to go and try and explain to people what he's doing. So don't get upset with Rambam that he was learning philosophy. It is permitted for those close to the rules to learn Greek wisdom, to understand the skills of the docs, to take each measure, the forms, the other forms of knowledge. I was quoting a Gemara and Sefer Sofrim that people close to the king are allowed to learn things that really other people shouldn't be learning. So they know how to speak in that kind of company. Right, when we lost the books of our sages, when we lost our land, they were forced to learn them from the books of the Greeks or other nations, and the heart straight after heresy. Okay. I also heard that you objected to Sefer Mada because he says that there is no form or shape to the one above. Rambam says the reason the French rabbis put Rambam in Cherem is because Rambam says God has no body. So who is the rabbis who are greater and better than Rambam that Ravid is talking about? It's the Balei Tosfot. Some of the Balei Tosfot, who not only believed that God had a body, but thought that Rambam was a heretic for saying God doesn't have a body, and put his books in Cherem. Now, we don't have very many explicit statements by the Balei Tosfot saying God has a body. There's really only one book written by anybody, written by one of the Balei Tosfot, that argues that it's heretical to say that God has no body. And that's a book called Ksav Tamim by a rabbi called Rabbi Moshe Taku, who I don't remember exactly when he lived. He was one of the later Tosafists. This is a book which is quoted by other people, but had disappeared, and they discovered a manuscript version of it, which is reprinted in Otzer Nechmad. Page numbers go from the Otzer Nechmad version of Ksav Tamim. It's not complete. There's bits which were lost. But the basic point of this book is to argue that it's heretical to say that God has no body. He starts off attacking Rav Sadia, and he also attacks Rambam. And I had to cut out a lot of the quotes. But so he says in source 11 that he, Rav Sadia, writes that a verse does not lose its simple meaning unless the simple meaning contradicts something that is testified to by the intellect, such as, "For the Lord your God is a devouring fire," which cannot be understood in its simple meaning since fire is physical. And the evidence of the wise men testifies that God does not have a physical body. This contradicts explicit verses and the commentaries of our rabbis. Rav Moshe Taku says that how can you reject what the Torah says because of your logic? Surely God wants us to think what it says in the Torah. And if he didn't, he wouldn't have written it in the Torah. So how can you say that logic is more important than Torah? Which clearly, that's clearly Rambam's point, and Rav Sadia, and the Kuzri, that it's true that the verses seem to say something different, it's true that Chazal seem to say something different, but logic dictates that God can have no body, because God has to be infinite, God has to keep the world moving constantly, so God must be infinite, therefore he can have no body. So, based on logic, I'm going to have to reinterpret all the words of Tanakh, says Rav Moshe Taku, that's heretical. How can you take a verse which says God is a fire, and say God's not a fire? I mean, it's dangerous. If you don't believe that, then what are you worshipping? So he says, source 12, now we will return to the opinion of the Torah and the opinion of our rabbis, and we will establish the honor of the Creator, blessed is his name, in the mouth of all creations, in his holiness, his creations. And we will remove the stumbling block from our minds. For the living God, his greatness cannot be measured, nor his powers. We cannot compare him to any image, and we who are fetid drops cannot think about his nature. When it is his will to show himself to the angels, he shows himself standing straight as much as they are able to accept. Sometimes he shows them a strange light without any form, and then knows that the divine presence is there. He has movement, which can be derived from the fact that his fetid creations have movement. But without the wisdom of the Torah, it is impossible for any person to recognize the greatness of the Holy One, blessed is he, through intellect. In other words, says Rav Moshe Taku, you can't think about God. Right? We read Rambam in the beginning saying that you can't speak about God unless you first thought about God, because you're not talking about God, you're talking about something imaginary. Chas v'shalom, says Rav Moshe Taku, don't think of it. How can you possibly think about God? Your intellect is limited. You've got a finite brain. Your logic can only go so far. And God is well beyond anything. So you can't possibly think about God. All you can do is take what God wrote and believe that. Diametrically opposed to what Rambam's writing. And finally, final quote from Ksav Tamim on the next page, source 13, right, where he says explicitly, the problem with the approach of Rambam and the approach of Rav Sadia is that they're using logic, and using logic to override what it says in the Torah, and using logic to override what it says in the Mishnah, using logic to override what it says in the Talmud. Surely, Judaism is based on our text, on our scripture, on our traditions, and if you start using logic, which is not even a Jewish idea, I mean, who made up logic? It's a Greek idea. So Rambam went and read Aristotle, and then using Aristotle is going to try and reinterpret the Torah. Right? That can't be. He says, my complaint against Sefer Emunot, which is Sadia Amunavadeus, my complaint against Sefer Emunot is that he comes along using Chochma Chetzonis, meaning non-Jewish wisdom, philosophy, and increases sins by leading the people from complete fear of God and causing them to think about things until they no longer know the foundations upon which they are standing. He strengthens the hands of those astrologers who have impure thoughts in their hearts against the Talmud of our rabbis, which is a complete Torah, and he strengthens their idle chatter. Until the time of Rav Sadia, nobody would make a new meaning in the simple meaning of the Torah, the prophets, the Ksuvim, or the words of our rabbis, which are trustworthy and remain standing forever. Says Rav Moshe Taku, we have our traditions, we know what we have. Along comes Rav Sadia and says, well, I think it doesn't make sense, I'm going to mean something different. That's heretical. I wrote an article in Rishimu's journal, where I argued that the argument between Ksav Tomim and Rav Sadia and Rambam is whether we are supposed to be rational or just be believers and not rational. Whether our task is just to say, okay, Rabbi says do this, I'm going to go and do it, or whether we're supposed to try and figure things out and understand whether we can use philosophy or science or history or anything as a tool to understand God, or whether we're supposed to just say this is what it says in the words, in the text, and that's what it is. I still think there's something to that, but I'm not sure I believe it quite as much as I... I'm not sure that the argument between this is quite as simple as I made up in this article. I wonder if it says an argument between the Ashkenazim and the Sfarim about whether we're supposed to think and use philosophy or not use philosophy. I'm not sure the division is quite as simple as that, and I think there's different ways of using philosophy and different ways of using thinking. So I still think there's something to what I wrote, but I'm going to say something slightly different now.
And also to do with what the Ramchal was saying in terms of like every Jew must believe and know, etc., etc., and that the believing and knowing has to be.
The problem, three problems. Believe and to know means just believe it, and also you have to know it. Meaning you just accept tradition unquestioningly, and also try and figure it out and know it yourself. Two problems. One is Ramchal is after the Arizal, so we're going to talk about him next week anyway, not for now. Second thing is that Ramchal is probably quoting Rambam, who doesn't say that exactly, but he may have said that. People thought he said that. In other words, Rambam, in the beginning of Sefer HaMada and Mishnah Torah, starts off by saying, Yisod ha-yisodot va'amut ha-chochmot, the foundation of foundations and the pillar of wisdom is Leida she'esham atzirishan, to know there is a prime mover. That's knowledge. If you look in Sefer Mitzvahs, the first mitzvah in Sefer Mitzvahs says, right, mitzvah Aleph, he hatzivui ashetivanu b'hamanat ha'elokot. The belief, the mitzvah is the belief of God. So the Ramchal, I think, took the emunah from Sefer Mitzvahs and the idea from Sefer Amada and put them together to know and to believe. I think, maybe he's got other sources, but that's one understanding, at least, of the Ramchal. The only problem with that, again, I'm sure the Ramchal is right, as Ramchal, but Sefer Mada was written in Hebrew. Sefer Mitzvah was written in Arabic. And if you look at the Arabic word that he uses over here, it's not at all clear that it means belief. It means something much more to do with knowledge, such a certain knowledge that you believe it to be, you know it to be true. As a belief rather than know it to be true because you figured it out. So I don't think Rambam means emunah over here in the way that we use the word faith today. But many people think that he does because this new translation, the access to the Arabic is only a much more recent thing. And recent translation, everyone uses the Ibn Tabundra, everyone uses the classic translation where it says emunah. And only recently some people have started retranslating it and saying, hang on a second, doesn't actually mean that. So that's why I'm going to need Ramchal. Because in a sense, those are two contradictions. I mean, again, the way I'm presenting it, those are two opposites. Right. Rambam says clearly many, many times, you've got to figure out God, you've got to understand, you've got to think it through. And the whole Moreh Nevuchim is basically on this idea, that God's not physical, that you've got to think about God and to explain, understand God, and what all those, all the whole first section is to explain the words that look like God is physical, to explain how they're not physical. Rambam, I think, clearly says that we're supposed to try and understand God logically. And then, having done that, we're supposed to read that into the Chumash, into Chazal, and all those other things. Whereas Emunah doesn't necessarily mean this, but for Ksav Tami, Emunah means you've got to believe it, because it says over here, and your logic is irrelevant, or useless when you come and talk about God.
What did Rav Sadia do?
Believe in logic. What's the name of his book?
It's just because he's the first person apparently who added new meaning.
Yes.
So just wondering.
He rejects the simple meaning of the word of the in source number 3. Right. Blah, blah, blah. He says right that they thought God had a body and it can't be because whatever. And as a result of that, he reinterprets the verse and the statements to be non-literal. So, okay, we've got Moshe Taku, maybe, well, I had people tell me that that's probably a forgery, even though it's clearly not forgery, quoted by many, we've shown in a well-known book that we love, but it's not forgery. And then there's a minority opinion, and we don't hold like that anyway, and of course, right, you know, it's irrelevant. I think, and this is where the shiur gets a little bit controversial, I think that Rashi agrees that we're not supposed to try and use logic to understand God. In his commentary on Chumash, and his commentary on the Gemara, I think Rashi says things, at the very least, Rashi says things which could easily lead somebody to think that God has a body. And Rashi doesn't put a note at the bottom saying, by the way, don't think God has a body. Right. I don't believe, Rabbi Nathan Slifkin wrote an article saying that Rashi thought God has a body. I don't believe that Rashi held God has a body. But I think that Rashi believes you're supposed to believe what the words say and not try and use logic to figure out something different. Or at least in some cases. But by the way, possibly the first person to say that God has no body, specifically, is the Rambam claims, is Onkelos in his translation of the Chumash. Onkelos is almost always very careful to not describe God in physical terms. And Onkelos is second century. So he's very early. he doesn't write it explicitly, but he almost always uses terms that are not physical. Anyway, it says Rashi. Right, just the context is a verse in Isaiah, so it's what it says, on that day, again, not my translation, on that day shall the Lord shave with a razor that is hired in the parts beyond the river, even with the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the feet, and it shall also sweep away the beard. I have no idea what that verse really means. It's some kind of prophecy about God's going to destroy everybody and completely. But the Gemara has a whole story about God coming to shave Sancherib, who is the general of the Assyrians. Source 15. Amar Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Abahu says, "Il mali mikra kasuv, eif shala omra." If it wasn't written in the pasuk, it would be impossible to say such a thing. What does that mean? It means it is written, so it is possible to say it. But if it wasn't written, it would be impossible to say it. What's that? Dichtiv. It says, "Biyomhu yigalach Hashem b'tas chira ba'ever anav melech ashur et rosh ata." Right? Asa kutshu brichu ve'id melei ki gavra saba. God came and appeared to Sancherib as an old man. And there was a whole story, and then he went to hire a shaver, and then he shaved him, and then he cut his head. The Gemara has a whole story about God coming and shaving Sancherib, based on this verse that God will shave with a razor. Right? The verse seems to say God will do that, and the Gemara says more explicitly that God appears as an old man and fools Sancherib into allowing him to be shaved. Now, the Yad Ramah, for example, is another Rishon, and he says, Chas v'shalom, God doesn't have a body. It must be with an angel that appeared to Sancherib like an old man. He's got a whole explanation. But if you look at Rashi over there, Rashi says on this verse, it's impossible to say. What's impossible to say, says Rashi, right, if it wasn't written? Be impossible to say, Yishalom, Amro, Shiachonish Baruch Hu, Ba'atzmoy, Gilchol, Sancherib. If it weren't for the verse, you would not be able to say that God himself shaved Sancherib. That means, I think, when God appeared as an old man, it was God himself appearing as an old man, the Shev Sancherib. I'm sure people have different explanations of the Rashi, because since we all know that God doesn't have a body, Rashi couldn't possibly have thought that God has a body, so if we have to reinterpret Rashi to make it not say that. But if you read Rashi with an open mind, just look at the words, it seems to me to be saying that God himself, whatever God himself means, came and shaved Sancherib and appeared as an old man.
When you say we know God doesn't have a body, How do we know?
I mean, nowadays, if you ask any Jewish person anywhere, they'll say, of course, God doesn't have a body. Of course, God doesn't have a body.
Why can we say that, then?
So therefore, when I read Rashi, I can't imagine that Rashi didn't know as much as I know. If I know God has no body, of course Rashi knew God has no body. So therefore, Rashi must mean something else. I mean, that's how all Jewish literature works. We reinterpret earlier texts to make them fit with what we're thinking nowadays. The Gemara reinterprets them. The Mishnah reinterprets the verses. The Gemara reinterprets the Mishnah. The Rishonim reinterprets the Gemara. So they're not arguing with it. They just say it means what I'm saying now. So we just naturally tend to assume. I mean, when we read Chumash, we reinterpret the verses to mean God has no body, because we know that's the fact. So we read Rashi, we reinterpret it to mean that Rashi knew God has no body. That's natural, and that's, I think, how... But if you read the words, I think it looks as though God...
But I'm saying, like, how do... When you say, like, everyone knows...
Yeah.
Like, I'm not disagreeing with that, but how do we know that? Because we use logic. But they're saying we shouldn't use logic.
Exactly.
So, but then they would say we don't really know.
Why? Because Rambam won. Because everyone believes in that Rambam. That you're a heretic if you think God has a body. Why is I don't know historically why that's the case, but it seems that Rambam is accepted by everybody. So I mean, people don't even know it's Rambam. It's just obvious that God has no body.
Right.
Why that is historically and why that is also I don't know. But it doesn't mean that the alternative view is not a valid one. Like the Rambam says, people greater than Rambam believe differently than Rambam, so you can't call them a heretic, even though they might be wrong. But they're not heretics. Right. So. Chas v'shalom say Rashi is a heretic, but it's possible to say that Rashi held differently than Rambam. Rashi lived before Rambam. How should Rashi know what Rambam's going to say? He probably didn't even know Rav Saadia Gaon. I'm not sure whether he knew Rav Saadia or not, because he lived after Rav Saadia, but I don't know if he had his books. You know, there were no books, but they had his manuscript. But Rashi could believe that. Let's look in Chumash. There's a verse in Chumash. Devarim, if a man has, again, King James translation, not me. If a man had committed a sin worthy of death, then he'd be put to death, right? And they'll hang him on a tree. Right, what happens? When the Sanhedrin kills somebody, certain kinds of death penalty, then after he's dead, they hang the dead body on a tree. Right, or a piece of wood, whatever it is. His body shall not remain all night upon the tree, but thou shalt surely bury him the same day. Right? They killed him close to sunset, they put the body on the tree for 5 minutes, then put it down and buried it. That's the source of the concept. We don't leave dead bodies overnight and bury straight away. Why is that? Why do we have to bury people straight away? Why do we take this pit off the tree? For he that is hanged is a reproach unto God. Now, that's King James' translation. The Hebrew is ki kilalat Elohim talui. It's a curse of God that's hanging. Well, it doesn't really make sense, but whatever. Okay, as thou defile not thy land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance. What does Rashi say over here? Rashi explains this phrase, right, reproach to God, it's a disgrace for the king if we leave a person hanging on a tree. Why? Because a human being is made in the, now we're going to have different words for image, but dmut dukano, in the image of God. V'yisrael hem banav, and Israel are God's children. Right, therefore, to leave a body on the tree is degrading the image of God. Up to here, there's nothing that says physicality. But that could be in all sorts of ways. I can understand that. But then he gives an analogy, and Rashi actually is quoting a Gemara. It's not Rashi's. He says, Mashal l'shnei achim te'omin. It's analogous to two identical twin brothers. Shiu domin zelazeh, identical. Echad naseh melech, one becomes the king. Ve'echad nitpas l'listiyot. And the other one becomes a bandit, a murderer. V'nitzle, and he's killed, he's hanged. Right? But he looks exactly the same as the king. So kol haro'e oto, omer ha'melech talui. Anyone comes by and sees this head, this body on the tree, will think it's the king who's been killed. Because they're identical twins. That's the analogy to hanging a body on the tree. Now, I don't think it's possible to understand that, except to say that God could appear as a human form.
Well, I was possible though, because people do explain it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, how do they explain it? In, like, also esoteric terms, meaning that it's not talking about physical... Well, first of all,
I know.
It's mashal, it's not...
I know, I understand all of that, but what's a limshal? I've heard those interpretations, but when you try and read it back into the words of Rashi, I don't think it's, or the words of the Gemara, I don't think it fits. Why would you get confused between the king and his brother?
To say that we're in the image of God, to understand that it's not physical, means like our neshama, right? So once a person dies, and it's just the physical body, I mean, this is not even the second part, this is just the problem I have with the first part, was once the person dies, to say that that's the reason that we don't leave them uncovered is they're only physical now that the neshama is not even there. So then to say that they are still in the image of God, that's how we don't live, is to say the physical is an image of God.
Right. Again, I don't think anyone thinks God has a human body. But there must be something analogous in God, something in God analogous to a physical human body. So much so that I'd almost get confused, and when the metaphor get confused, is this God or is this a person?
But that might just be a problem with the mashal, because it's trying to get a point across. It's not...
But could be. It could be. It could be. Or it could be that he actually means it. That you know, at one time in history, God appeared as a human being. Or God did something that makes him seem something that a human being would do. Or something about God which is more similar to a physical body. And therefore, if you leave a body on the tree, you're downgrading God, because God, you're right. You're not going to say, oh, God's hanging on the tree. I mean, that would make you a Christian. Right. But it's something analogous to God that's hanging on the tree, which it must be something physical, because the Neshama is gone. Now, I don't know how to read this without attributing some kind of physicality to God, however.
But even so, like, if you're talking about the mashal,
yeah.
If you're talking about a king and a criminal,
yeah.
Like, you wouldn't make that mistake unless they are without their clothes or without their identifying. Do you know what I mean? Like, if
he's in prisoner clothes. He's got stripy pajamas on.
Right, so then you know it's the criminal. You're not going to confuse him for the
king. You might think the king was thrown in jail. You just come back to town,
yeah.
And you see a guy hanging on the tree, and he looks just like the king. You don't know the king has a twin brother. You see the same thing, you see a person. I mean, you're right. You're not going to think God's on the tree. I don't think that's what it means. But there must be something we can compare with a physical body to God. Or at least, at the very least, Rashi's not bothered if you would make that mistake. He doesn't say, by the way, you'll be a heretic if you make that mistake. Right? I'm giving you don't take this literally, because that may there'll be. If this was heresy, if Rashi's held that thinking God has any physicality is heretical, I don't think he could have written this and just left it without a warning at the end. I'm not saying that Rashi believes God has a body. God's not a person walking around. That's ridiculous. That's childish. Rashi's very sophisticated. But I do think that Rashi believes that God can appear having attributes of physicality. If God chose, God could do things that would make him seem physical. I'm going to come back to the end. In the very beginning of Chumash, when God creates Adam and Eve, it says, Nasir Adam b'tzalmeinu, kidmoseinu. In our image, in our form. Rashi explains, in our image means b'tfus shelanu, in our mold. Except that the Sifsei Chachamim and the others explain, in our mold means, in our mold we made to make Adam out of. Not our mold that God's made out of, but God made a like a cookie cutter, and it's a human being shaped cookie cutter, and he, so that's what it means. Fine, okay. Kin Mosenu is Lavinu Haskil, to understand and to think. We're like God. The Dmut, the form of God is that we can think. The Tselem of God is something physical. And it says, B'Tselem Elokim Bara Oto, Pirish Lecha She'Oto Tselem Hamitru Kan Lo, Tselem Jukan Yitzuru Ho. This is the problematic Rashi. That the verse now explains to you that this cookie cutter that was prepared for Adam is a image of the form of God, of the Creator. Now, one of the Balei Tosfot reads, who's a Rishai Detrani, cats.
I'm sorry.
Don't you have cats where you come from? Possums. Possums don't sound like that. Source number 20. The Tosfot read comments on Rashi, and Tosfot read says, he argues on Rashi, but he says that Rashi believes that God has a physical form. Right? He says source 120. Rashi explains. He's commenting on the second one about the. I mean, sorry, on the first thing that we quoted about the body being hung on a tree. Rashi explains that man is made in the image of God. But in Bereshit, on the verse that doesn't make man our image, Rashi explains that it was in the image prepared for him. Why is he not explaining the image of God literally? The answer is that certainly man is not made in the image of the Creator. But the reason he explains here in the image of God is that when God appears to people, he takes on the form of a person. But the image of God is not known. Again, Tosfos read, Shazrani argues on Rashi, but he says that Rashi believes that God appears to people in a human form.
And when has God appeared to people?
When God spoke to Moshe.
In the human form.
But it is said that on Mount Sinai there was no human form.
Okay, but he spoke to Moshe before and he appeared to Avram and he appeared to Noah and I don't know, any day, if either he did or if he wanted to, he could appear in a human form. That's how Tosfos, again, forget about me. Tosfos read says that Rashi believed that God could appear in human form. The Moreh Nevuchim, just to show why Rashi is so far removed from Rambam. Right, Rashi says, but even if you don't believe me and you don't believe the Tosfos read and you want Rashi to be Rashi, right, he is very different than Rambam. Betzalmeinu means in tfus, in a form, and kitmodeinu is to understand. Rambam says, in the very beginning of Moreh Nevuchim, it's almost as if he's arguing, coming to argue on Rashi. Some have been of the opinion that by the Hebrew word tselem, the shape and figure of a thing is to be understood. And this explanation led men to believe in the corporeality of the divine being. For they thought that the words, let us make man in our tselem, implied that God had the form of a human being, i.e. that he had figure and shape, and that consequently he was corporeal. They adhered faithfully to this view and thought that if they were to relinquish it, they would, eo ipso, reject the truth of the Bible. If you deny that God has a form, you're denying the words of the Torah, you're a heretic. And further, if they did not conceive God as having a body possessed of face, limbs, similar to their own appearance, they would have to deny even the existence of God. Since we can't imagine, conceive of something that's non-physical, if we would say that God is non-physical, then we're saying God doesn't exist, because we can't even imagine what that is. The sole difference which they admitted was that he excelled in greatness and splendor, and that his substance was not flesh and blood. Right? God's not human. Right, that's what Rambam writes the whole Moreh Nevuchim really to argue on that position. Now, I don't know if that is Rashi's position, but it almost could fit with Rashi.
Isn't it possible to say that God can appear in human form like that's what angels are? Because even though they're not God, they're doing the will of God. So that is essentially like an appearance.
Right.
Because they don't do anything that's not the will of God.
Right, but human beings also, I mean, you're right.
No, but human beings...
You're right, but we can't say, Vayidaber Adonai El Moshe Le'emor, if it's an angel. For example. Or the Rashi in the Gemara who says, Kadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo. He's explicitly saying it's not an angel, it's God. I don't know what that means. I mean, it's a word, so I don't know what an angel is, I don't know what God is. When it comes down to it, and I take your point that everything is an agent of God. But the truth is that next week I have to give a shiur on post-Kabbalah, and there's a lot more of that kind of idea that you're saying. You're saying a good point, but I don't see that here necessarily. What's the real... Actually, let's read the... I love this. Al Tikavotecha is a short... pamphlet, treatise, written by Rabbi Profiat Duran, which is a great name. He lived in the second half of the 1300s, and at a time, the Spanish Inquisition really got going in 1492, but in 1392, in Spain, although it wasn't really Spain, it was Spain of today, but it wasn't yet Spain then, they also made rules that the Jews had to convert, and they had all sorts of inquisitions, as it were. So there's a whole discussion about Profiat Duran, who's also known as Ephod, Efod, which stands for Ani Prophet, you're right. He wrote a commentary on Rambam called Efod, and a sefer called Maisa Efod. many are of the opinion that he also converted to Christianity, pretended to be a Christian, and then converted back to be Jewish afterwards. This book, the article, he starts off, it's written to a friend of his called David Bongiorno, who it seems from context that they both were kind of hidden Jews acting as Christians, and they had agreed that they were going to run off together to Israel to escape from the Inquisition. They'd go back to being fully Jewish. David Bongiorno went as far as Marseille. He got there and he met up with Paul Santa Maria, who was another former Jew who converted, who was like Makar of them. What's the opposite of Kirov when you make someone a Christian? Whatever. Rechuk. He was Merachek him.
What is that?
Karov and Rechuk are opposites. But anyway, he had originally made him into a Christian. He caught up with this fellow in Marseille and persuaded him to stay as a Christian. So Efodi gets a letter from the person he was about to go away with to Israel saying, by the way, I'm deciding to stay a Christian, forget about it. So he wrote a letter back to him, which is so cynical and sarcastic. That's like my favorite thing from a Rishon that I've ever seen. He wrote a letter back. It's called, it doesn't have a name, but everyone calls it Al Tia Kavotecha, which is don't be like your fathers. And it's a whole thing saying, don't be like, you know, your ancestors, the Jews, who, da-na-na.
Wait, this is the Christian one writing?
This is the Jewish one writing to the Christian one.
Oh, so he's saying that because he's being sarcastic.
Yeah, don't be like your ancestors who did this, but be like the Christians who do this. And in everything, you see that the Jews, he explains the Jews were doing this sensible, logical, clever thing, and the Christians doing a stupid thing. And they're saying, but don't be like them, be like, right? So, Al Tia Kavotecha, don't be like your fathers. It was so well written that the Christians thought it was an attack on Judaism. And it was a rabbi writing in favor of Christianity. Don't be like them, be like the Christians. So they used to republish it. But they didn't know Al Tia Kavotecha. It somehow became called Alta Kabotica, which is Al Tia Kavotecha, said really quickly, with a Spanish accent. So there's a Christian book called Alta Kabotica, which is this. So one of the points he makes, right, when he's writing, Prophet Jeremiah, writing to David Bongiorno, says, do not be like your fathers who believed in a God who does not change in any kind of way. They denied with all the strength of their intellect any form of physicality to him. They were given simple and pure intellect to draw them after philosophy in their multitudes and tumult. They gave explanations to the simple meaning of the Torah, which acts as a mask for those multitudes who are intellectually too weak to see rationally. What did the Jews do? They used their logic and rationality to reinterpret the simple meaning of the words. The Torah is written a simple way for the simple people, but the clever people see it properly and reinterpret it. Don't be like that, he says. But you are not so. Do not deny him physicality or body, heaven forbid. Believe in him that he clothed himself with flesh and one of his personalities. He did not come to the three as he wanted. His blood was spilled like water, atoned for his people, and he found favor as a sacrifice. In other words, the Jews believe God has no body, Christians believe God has a body, and that's the one of the major distinctions between Judaism and Christianity. Which probably it is today as well, to be honest. One of the reasons that Jews believe God has no body is because they thought he had a body, they'd be Christian. And that's possibly why Rambam's view is accepted and has become that's the difference between Judaism and Christianity. What is the real argument here between them? This is how I'm going to say something different than I said in Rishima. There's a famous philosophical question which goes back to at least Augustine, which is different versions of the question. Basically, can God create a rock which is so heavy that he can't lift it? Right? Can God make something that then he can't? In other words, the question is the omnipotence paradox. If God can do anything, can he do something which is logically impossible? Can God make a round triangle? Can God do something which is logically impossible? Can God make 2 + 2 = 5? So this has been a machlokas amongst philosophers for at least 2,000 years, with all sorts of different opinions on it. But I want to suggest that that's the machlokas at essence between Rambam and Rav Saadia, Kuzari, and Duran, against the Bali Tosfot. If you say God can't have a physical form, now if you believe in the supremacy of logic, then God is bound by the laws of logic. God can't make 2 plus 2 equals 5 because 2 plus 2 equals 4. God can't make a round triangle because a triangle is not round. God can't make a rock that's bigger than he can lift because that's a paradoxical statement that has no meaning. So God can't have a physical body because a physical body would be finite and that would be a denial of the omnipotence of God. God has to follow the rules of logic. Because, I'll say it differently. If God follows the laws of logic, that in no way removes his omnipotence. That's not a lack of... We don't say God can't do everything because he can't do something illogical. We're not limiting God by saying he can't do something that's illogical. If something illogical is something that's a meaningless. Something meaningless is nothing. So God being physical is a meaningless statement. It's not limiting God in any way to say he can't do that. That's Rambam.
Okay. You just helped me understand.
Oh. Right, whereas...
Because
I'm sitting there going,
triangle's not a circle.
Right. Whereas Moshe Taka would say, God can do anything. And if you say God can't do something, then you're limiting God. That would be limiting God's omnipotence. Since we believe God is omnipotent, God can do anything, so he can do anything. If God wanted to make a circle that's a triangle, he could do it.
But that wouldn't be a circle.
Doesn't matter. God can do it, though. Doesn't make sense. It's not logical. God can do it, though. God can appear as a person. It's illogical. Doesn't matter. God can do that. And if you say can't, then you're limiting God. You're saying God's not omnipotent. And we have to believe God can do anything. So therefore, I have to be able to believe that if the Torah says God's physical, God could be physical. And if I say God can't be physical, I don't have to understand what it means. I don't know how it works. It doesn't make any sense. But that doesn't matter. I'm supposed to believe what it says, because if I don't believe what it says, if I start using logic, then who knows where I'm going to end up. Then I'm limiting God to what I can think of. God is now bound by my intellect. So, on that note, we'll finish that. This is an argument which, again, nowadays we can't even imagine because everyone agrees God has no body. Although, next week, we will see that, of course, God has a body. Because that's all of Kabbalah is talking about, God's body. Yeah, we'll finish it.
Thank you. I'm more bothered by this share than last week.